19 years of experience with school management. She is the chair of the Shastric Advisory Council to the GBC, an associate editor of Back to Godhead, and she's formerly a professor of sociology of religion at the Bhaktivedanta College. She travels worldwide teaching Krishna consciousness. She's the author of Essence Seekers, Dr. Best, Learn to Read, the 83 book literacy program, and the Great Mantra for Mystic Meditation. So I really, in one sense, think that a lot of devotees in South Africa already know Urmila Prabhu. She has traveled here. So welcome, Urmila Prabhu. We are very happy to have you here participating in the PBT conference. Joining her today is Kamala Sita Devadasi. And she grew up in small towns in Namibia and South Africa. So she is a South African, and she studied BA languages at the University of Stellenbosch right here in South Africa. She worked shortly as an English teacher before returning to Stellenbosch for her postgraduate studies in 2010. And it was during this time that she was introduced by her brother, Hari Vilas Das, to the world of yoga and devotees. In the following year, she became a member of the Spirituality, Philosophy, and Yoga Society in Stellenbosch, and she played a role in bringing festivals such as the Buddha Fest and Gaura Fest to the student masses. She received her first initiation from His Holiness Indradyumna Swami on Ram Nomi in 2015, and she has a PhD in linguistics, which she got later that same year. She was set to follow a career in linguistics when she married her husband and moved to Germany. And she's living in Germany since 2018 right now. So welcome to you as well, Kamala Sita Prabhu. We are very grateful that you joined us today.
Thank you very much.
So as I mentioned, we're going to be discussing the book called Krishna Meditations. And my first question is just an introductory one, and that is, could you tell us about Krishna Meditations? Just a point for the audience. The book is not out as yet. It is a book that's going to be published by BBT Africa, and right now the manuscript is available, and I was very fortunate to be able to read through the manuscript in preparation for the interview, and it's a very wonderful book. But I will just ask you as the authors and co-authors, should I say, to introduce the book.
It's about how you can find Krishna in the world, how you can look at the sky, the clouds, the trees, your arm, your cup of water, your friend. You can think about things and immediately connect them with Krishna.
Yeah, it's we wanted to make a practical book on meditations because devotees have such a busy life, and it's very difficult sometimes to think of Krishna in everyday situations. So it's like Urmila Prabhu said, it's about being able to look at things that seem mundane, but you can automatically connect it to Krishna.
Thank you. So you highlighted in that the fact that it's an attempt to be able to create some absorption in Krishna, towards Krishna. And I was wondering, you know, does that title, Krishna Meditations, is there any special significance to it? Urmila Prabhu, you very concisely described what the book is about. You know, you could have perhaps called it just Meditations or something along those lines. Is there any specific reason that you wanted to call it Krishna Meditations?
Well, because it's meditations on Krishna. That's the simplest answer. I mean, meditation has become a very popular thing in the world today. But this is how we can take being in the present, being in our environment, and to have it be about the person Krishna.
Thank you. Kamala Sita Prabhu?
Yeah, it's Yeah, because the main thing that we want people to think about is Krishna. So it's how do you meditate about Krishna? It's not, and that's why also we have, yeah, everything is centered around Krishna. So his name should be in the title.
Thank you. So what's interesting about the book is that it's co-authored, you know. Sometimes we might find that there's one author in a book, but here we have two authors. And I was just wondering, what was that collaboration like? Could you give us some background in terms of how it developed? And what was the process that you followed in that co-authoring process?
Well, I had started on this book as a series of Back to Godhead articles on the elements. And then at a certain point I thought, it'd be nice to turn this into a book, and I broke up the meditations into different parts. I broke up the articles into shorter meditations and was working on some stuff. And Kamalasita and I were corresponding about other things. And in each of her emails, she would add some kind of a blessing. It was so beautifully written. Each of them was so full of poetry and emotion. And I thought, wow, what an incredible writer. And not just a writer, but someone who really was going deep into thinking about Krishna in one's daily life. That's what she was doing. So I asked her if she was willing to co-author this book with me. And at first she took one of the sections. There are four main sections. So I was working on one section was already done as part of my Back to Godhead articles, and I was working on the other two sections, and I gave her a section, and she worked on that, and it went through an editor, and then it kind of went off on the back shelf for many years. It just kind of sat there. And I was speaking in a class about some of my other books, and one of the participants said, when are you going to finish that book on Krishna meditations? And I'm like, oh, it's on the back burner. And then he said, put it on the front burner. And a number of other people in the class said, you know, open it up again. So I contacted Kamalasita, like, okay, can we open this up again? And then she was the one who really pushed it forward recently, and I'll let her tell you about that, when she joined me in Goloka Dham in Germany.
Yeah, I have to start by saying that it was quite an interesting process, because it started as these blessings, and then, yeah, I have to say my deep gratitude to the people of Goloka Dham, the devotees of Goloka Dham, because I live, so Urmila Prabhu and I, we had the opportunity to meet each other twice. I think 1 year, and then the next year again, we had like these few days of really intensive writing. Although, I mean, we had to focus ourselves, because we tend to talk about a lot of other stuff in between. But so that time was really vital. In just really meditating on Krishna while we write these Krishna meditations. And the process was also, I can think of only the German words now. We had a lot of exchange. We swapped out a lot of ideas, and we helped, we kind of used each other as a sounding board for what we were thinking and what we were writing. So it's a process that's many layered, I would say.
Yeah, and we would, you know, I would edit her work, she would edit my work, and at this point, other than the first section, which I wrote myself, the rest of it, it's really hard at this point to tease out exactly who wrote what. Because
I don't keep track, I lost count.
Right, and then at the end we were working on WhatsApp to finish things and to edit things, and you know, okay, I changed this one, take a look, oh, I don't like this, I don't, and we'd go back. It was I had a lot of fun. I mean, it really...
No, it was interesting.
It was a very wonderful process to go through where we were helping each other. I mean, it's kind of the perfect idea of devotee association where we're helping each other to remember Krishna at every moment throughout the day. And now we want to share that with the rest of the world.
Yeah.
Sounds like it was an ideal partnership of sorts based on exactly the principles that we're trying to achieve, meditating on Krishna, as you mentioned. I was going to ask the question, did each of you come up with certain concepts or themes or meditations, and how did that work? But you sort of answered it in the process. But I'll just put it out there. Was there, you know, a sort of delineation in terms of this is the work that I'm going to do, or was it really just like collecting all of these themes? You also mentioned that there were four sections, the one on elements, the one on Krishna's qualities, the one on the universal form, and the one on
Bhagavad Gita.
So those are the four. So was it not that each of you worked on one specific section, or was it that you worked on meditations within each of those sections?
Well, first I wrote the element section, so that I did myself for the Back to Godhead articles that then I broke into pieces. And Kamalasita first did all the 64 qualities one herself. Then with the others from the Bhagavad Gita and the universal form, we each did some of them initially. But then we went through all of those together. So, you know, no matter who wrote one initially, the other person also gave feedback on it and changed it, so that at the end it really ended up to be a very collaborative effort.
Yeah, at the beginning, I mean, you already did the skeletal work in terms of you or Arula Prabhu already had the vision of what we were going to use, and I just kind of jumped on the boat in the middle somewhere. But it's also interesting, this whole process, we wrote a section, and then we wrote sections together. But that second process that we went through, everything is done now, but then we went through it again, and a lot of the things changed. We had some really serious rewrites, because I think life also just happens in between, so you get serious perspectives and stuff like that.
I think there's some...
No, it's okay. It was just the phone ringing in the background.
It seems like we may have a slight problem with the connection in Kamalasita, but I'm sure it'll come back. Thank you for that. It really is interesting how you almost sort of fed off each other's energy in this process. And... you know, what I found was that some of the artwork, I was given a few pictures to look at, and the artwork is quite evocative to bring out the meditations. Can you tell us about the artist?
Is it possible for me to share my screen for a minute? Or you're going to share your screen of the artwork. All right, you want to show us some of the artwork?
Yeah, I think there's a screen sharing that's going to happen.
Yes, okay. So what happened was that I was on Facebook and I saw the artwork of a friend of mine. If I can, if you can give me the screen sharing for a minute here. And so this is Nadia Bihari, darling, and some of you know her as a very famous kirtan leader. She's married to Amala Harinam. Amala Harinam was my student in Gurukula. I literally knew Amala Harinam from when he was in his mother's womb. And Nadia Bihari just started illustrating the verses from the Bhagavad Gita, the I am the taste of water, I am the light of the sun. She was illustrating these verses herself, and she was posting them on Facebook. And so I thought, wow, here's somebody who's already making illustrations for what we want to do. And so I contacted her and I said, you know, would you be interested in illustrating our book? And she was really excited about it. She says, you know, I've never done anything like that before. I've just done art for myself. And I've worked with illustrators before, worked with artists before, but this was a unique experience because in the past, what I would do is I would decide what they were going to illustrate. I would say, I want you to illustrate this thing, and I would paint a picture in words for them, give them that, then they would do a sketch, they would send me the sketch for approval, I would make changes, then they'd send me another sketch, then we go forward, then they would send me the finished product. And I might even ask for changes with that. With this, in this case, I told Nadia Bihari, you just do what you want. Just do whatever inspires you, just do what you want. She never showed me much of a sketch. It's a few things, but that was it. Like, you know, is this okay? And then she ran with it. I didn't have enough of a budget. The artwork was paid for by donations that people have made to me over the years. So I didn't have enough of a budget for every single meditation to have a separate illustration. But I just said, okay, here's the budget I have, and do as many as you can within that budget. So it was really interesting experience because her contributions to the book were really totally, absolutely from her. It's almost like she was a third co-author and that she brought her own inspiration and her own insight. And what's further interesting, there's another book I'm working on with another co-author, Rukmini Devi Dasi, a.k.a. Dr. Ruchira Dutta, on the Varnas. This is a book that we're going to self-publish. And one of the things we explored is that goddess Sarasvati is the goddess of both learning and art. And so at the level of fine art, some people who are fine artists are in the realm of artistry. They're what we would call in Sanskrit shudras. But some people who do fine art are in the realm of ideas, what we would call in Sanskrit brahmanas. And it's quite different. When fine artists are in the realm of artistry, their art is primarily to communicate beauty. But when someone who's in the realm of ideas creates art, their motivation is to communicate absolute truth. And to work with someone who was doing art, you know, we think of a brahmana as preaching mainly with words, perhaps. But a brahmana could also teach through mathematics, or through art, or through dance, or through music. Therefore, we have Sarasvati as the goddess of each. So Nadia Bihari is definitely a brahmana who uses, of course, kirtan and also art to communicate. So it was a completely different experience as a organizer of a book to deal with an author who had the more, shall we say, independent-minded, truth-based mood in art. And it was just really, really a joy. It was a wonderful experience, and I felt very happy to be supporting a second-generation devotee, you know, Gurukuli, in their artwork and their contribution. And her husband told me recently that she was so excited. She said, "Wow, I'm now a commissioned artist." And I said, "Well, pretty soon she can have a celebration that I'm now a published artist." And I hope that she goes on and does many, many more wonderful, wonderful things with her art. We should also say that she did this artwork while taking care of a 2-year-old and while going through a situation where there was a pipe burst in her house and her whole house got flooded, and while traveling all over the world to do kirtan. So it was quite astonishing.
That's quite a wonderful story. Thank you for also putting the picture up to show us, you know, what who it was. We actually didn't know, so that adds to, you know, the wonderful nature of understanding who it is, because she also puts her heart into kirtan, so it's a beautiful story. So, you know, right now, for the audience, it might be quite theoretical. You haven't really, seen the book. You're just hearing about how it was co-authored, etc. So I'm going to start by explaining the various meditations that are categorized into these different sections. And I'm going to provide one that I found really interesting. So the meditation goes like this. When swimming in a pool or in an ocean, or in the ocean, we can experience the softness or liquidity of water. One of Krishna's qualities is his softness. That one, every time I look at our pool at home now, I think of that. the softness of Krishna. And, I've never really read any book that described water in that way. You know, in the Bhagavad Gita, we know he's the taste of water, but just in the feel of water, that's quite amazing. Could you elaborate on how these meditations were developed, especially these practical ones? I mean, I imagine you're swimming in a pool. And
yeah, that's exactly like what that happened. My god sister Kalangana in London, who's passed away, invited me to go swimming in London. And I said, I don't have a bathing suit, a bathing costume, they call it there. And so she arranged for someone to lend me one, and she took me to a pool. So as I'm swimming in the pool, being a complete Hare Krishna fanatic, I thought, well, I don't want to just be here for my sense enjoyment. I should remember Krishna. So I'm swimming. It's so embarrassing. Anyway, so I'm swimming in the pool, and I'm going, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. And all of a sudden, as I'm swimming, and I'm pushing the water, I thought, water is soft. And it's also very strong. Water is so strong. And it's also so soft. That's Krishna. Krishna is so strong. He's killing these demons. But he's also so soft and delicate. And I was just overwhelmed that how swimming could connect me with Krishna's personal form. So when I went back to the temple, I started writing. And I wrote down this realization of how Krishna is soft and strong, just like water, and how water reminded me. And then I wrote this whole article for Back to Godhead called Water. And I started meditating on all the qualities of water. Well, water gets us clean. Well, Krishna is also purifying. He gets us clean. Well, water refreshes us. Krishna's refreshing. You know, I just started meditating on all the different qualities of water and how they were also Krishna's qualities. And then Krishna's pastimes in the water, his pastimes on Kaliya, his pastimes as Matsya Avatar. And from there I said, well, what about the other elements? What about earth? What about air? You know, and I started, you know, looking around me and feeling, and okay, I'm in the air. Wow, air is really subtle. Krishna is really subtle. Air is pressing on my skin, but I lose awareness of it. Krishna is around me, but I lose awareness of it. So I started changing. You know, wherever I'd go, I'd start thinking like that. How can, you know, a lot of people in meditation talk about that, about being really fully present where you are, right? Mindfulness and being present. But I thought it's not just present to, oh, I see the trees, I see the light, I feel the temperature. But how is that Krishna? And then it was some years later before I thought about then going from there to all the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says I am and the universal form and the 64 qualities. And a lot of that came from discussions with Kamalasita about how to expand it.
Yeah, from my side, whenever I wrote a meditation, and I sort of, I didn't go through it like from beginning to end, I just sort of scrolled through the list, and some meditations, some heading would pop up, and there would something would spark a memory, and it's usually something that happened to me either just recently, or I drew a lot of my experience, or a lot of what I wrote, I drew from what I've experienced or what I've gone through. And then it was just a process of rewriting it in such a way that it would be applicable, or it could be applicable to everyone, or that everybody could resonate with it. But yeah, it's like you walk and then you think, you see the sunset, or it's usually like, I've always been a lot inspired by nature and how beautiful it is. And since I came to Krishna consciousness, or started the journey, it's a wonderful thing to know that you can connect something that's already dear to you, but then you know where it comes from, because Krishna is the best artist, so and he gives us so much to experience, air and water and everything in life can be turned into meditation if you have that mindset. So Krishna helped me, not always with pleasant experiences, but he always gave me some experiences which I could use in my writing.
Thank you for that. I think that's such a lovely story, Urmila Prabhu, about you swimming and having to want to transform that activity into something that can connect you with Krishna. And I mean, it's such a wonderful thing that you did and how you connected it. So it sounds like the book is very much a personal absorption, and you're sharing that personal absorption with the readers. And it's very appealing. I must mention that, you know, the quotes or the meditations that I talk about are mostly from one section of the book, which is the elements section. I thought we could leave a little for the readers to look forward to in the other sections, you know, the Bhagavad Gita and the Universal Form, because they are all really very amazing meditations. But you've already touched on the next point that I wanted to make, Urmila Prabhu, because the meditations are done in a way where, you know, they are sort of almost multiple and multilateral. So you look at it from different angles. And I had picked on the one about heat. And you talk about heat as something that sustains us. And then you talk about the destructive power of heat. And then it's the heat of digestion. And then you even bring in cooking, which is quite applicable to a lot of us because that's something we have to do every day. But I was just wondering then, how did you build those multiple meditations?
Well, I just have, okay, I'm going to think about heat. How do I find Krishna in heat? And then first I would look, and this was the opposite from the 64 qualities, where we start with Krishna. With all the other ones, we start with what's around us. So, okay, what does heat do? You know, well, heat fills our body with warmth. Oh, what is this warmth? It's a symptom of life. Krishna's the life of everything. You know, just going through the different qualities of heat, just thinking about them. I mean, one thing that helped, I suppose, is having been a Gurukul teacher for 27 years and, you know, learning about things, teaching about things with science and history and geography. And so there was already kind of a storehouse there of information about these different things. And then I could just, okay, well, what does heat do? When you're cooking, heat's exciting the molecules and they're jumping around and, you know, the steam comes out of the pot. And Krishna's like that. You know, when we're with him, he's when we're chanting his name, when we're seeing the deity, we become enlivened and we start jumping around and we start dancing, you know. And it was a relationship like that. With the 64 qualities, it was different. So with the elements, with the Gita, with the universal form, we started from the sky, or we started from heat, or we started from the clouds. With the 64 qualities, which Kamalasita can talk more about, we started from Krishna's qualities and then went from there to the world.
The 64 qualities was... we mainly wrote we used the nectar of devotion as a basis, because that's where the whole qualities are listed. So yeah, it was interesting to take a quality of Krishna, read about it, and then try and see how you can find that quality all over in everybody, because everybody has Krishna. For instance, I'm a linguist, so Krishna, one of his qualities is Krishna is the greatest linguist. So, and I mean, I would love to be able to speak 8, 10, 20 languages, and also, I mean, it's fascinating. There are actually some people in the world that can communicate to animals, and it's a quality that they get from Krishna. So, what was interesting for me is that, is really to see all the qualities. Krishna is a linguist, Krishna is kind, Krishna, all these qualities, it's, if you become aware of them, you can see them all, you can see them in anybody, and you can see them all, in many different circumstances. So, with what Urmila Prabhu was saying, is that we took heat and we try and saw Krishna in it, but then for the 64 qualities, we already knew the qualities that Krishna had, but then we had to kind of see it in a more diffused way, where it's present everywhere.
Okay. Actually, in the quality section, where you talk about Krishna as the linguist, the best, linguist. I think you mentioned about how he's able to say something and it has multiple meanings.
Right.
I thought that was quite nice. Multiple meanings and talk to animals and all sorts of things like that. So that's really a brilliant thing, considering the fact that you yourself are studied linguistics. So just to go back into the finding Krishna's qualities in the world, I noticed that there were four qualities, and that these were being highly learned, highly intelligent, a genius, and extremely clever. Now, if somebody asked me those, put those four in front of me, I'd find it very difficult to differentiate between these four qualities. Was there any particular research that you had to do in distinguishing between those four in particular?
Well, yeah, and it's funny you bring that out, because then we go to the original source of this, which is Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu of Rupa Goswami. And especially sometimes when Kamalasita and I were working over WhatsApp, and we, we'd say, okay, so how does Rupa Goswami define this? How did Jiva Goswami and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, how did they comment on this? How does Srila Prabhupada explain this in the Nectar Devotion? And then we tease out, what is the specific thing that Rupa Goswami is talking about that we want to refer to here. So it was basically like that. And sometimes we'd have to try different approaches to get something that really worked.
Yeah, it was a really a collaborative process of discussing things. Because on the first, when I first read it, I'm like, okay, these are all synonyms, they all mean the same, but actually not. And that was one of the wonderful things for me, is to see how multi-layered Krishna actually is, and that all those things are different. It was a really wonderful process of going deeper into what we were writing about.
Thank you for that. Just another question is, just generally, there are many books that promote meditation, both in the secular and non-secular world. And I was just wondering, what is unique about Krishna meditations? I know in the beginning you did mention that the whole point is to focus on Krishna, but is there anything different about the book that you wrote in terms of those meditations?
Well, I don't think anybody else has done anything like what we've produced. I just don't think there's anything close to it. I mean, there are people that write about, as we say, mindfulness and present moment awareness, which has something in common with what we've done. So in mindfulness and present moment awareness, you become aware of the temperature on your skin, the light around you, you know, with each of your senses, you become aware of your environment and you become very present to that moment in time. But we're taking that much further. Okay, you become present, and how is Krishna in that moment? You know, there's, as far as I'm aware, no one else has done a book of a personal meditation on the divine. You know, even if someone wants to talk about how you can find God in the wind and you can find God in the sun, it's usually going to be something impersonal. And we're presenting something very, very personal about Bhagavan Sri Krishna. So I don't know of anyone in the outside of the Vaishnava group who's done this, and I don't know of any other Vaishnava who's done this. I mean, it's interesting because I think, especially since starting on this journey, I've ended up really noticing the many, many places where Srila Prabhupada talks about doing exactly this, where he talks about always being conscious of Krishna by having the elements of our environment spark that remembrance. And of course, it's a very large part of the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Kamalasita, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, sorry, I lost track of the question. What was the question?
I was just saying that there are many books that...
Oh, yes, okay. Rula Prabhu said this is a very, very focused book that meditates on Krishna, and it's a lot of other books, the topic is sort of broad and you can slot it into many different sections, but this is about Krishna. And not only just about Krishna, but how you can see Krishna in everyday life. I don't think that there is a book like that already, or at least not that I have read. So it is special because I get a lot of questions about, I mean, how, like, I ask myself that all the time, is how do I see Krishna and in everyday life? And in all the classes that I've been for, Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita classes, a lot of the times people ask, yeah, okay, so I work, I have my day, I have my kids, I have my life, but, yeah, it's difficult to see Krishna everywhere. So this book is an attempt to answer that question. And it's a broad overview of way, because we took Bhagavatam, we took Bhagavad Gita, and we took Nectar of Devotion. It's all these broader, we try to condense everything into one book. So,
okay, thank you for that. But I like the point that it's about how do I see Krishna in my everyday life? Because, you know, for myself, I mean, I also work, I have to go out there, and it can be quite challenging at times to remember Krishna in certain circumstances. But with books like this, you know, guiding us, helping us along, I think it can really create what Urmila Prabhu talked about, taking it a step further and not just being mindful in the moment, you know, trying to take that mindfulness and connect that mindfulness with Krishna. So thank you for that. I wanted to now share my favorite meditation in the book. Should I say one of my favorite meditations? Because there were quite a few. And this one's also from the section about elements, and it's regarding space. So I will read out that meditation. The meditation goes as follows. When we notice space, It generally evokes positive, expansive emotions. We feel relief and satisfaction when there is room in a closet, drawer, or suitcase for the object we desire to keep. Similarly, our hearts become freed from the clutter of material desires and ambitions. We free up space in our consciousness for our most valuable purpose, which is to revive our relationship with Krishna. This experience brings us immense relief and satisfaction. I thought the way that you described space and the way we open up our consciousness and make space for Krishna, that was really beautiful for me. So I was wondering whether you have any favorite sections or meditations that you could share with us or read out to the audience.
Well, I have many, but I'll pick one here. So this is from the Universal Form section, that the Bhagavatam says, beneath the garments of the Lord who acts wonderfully is the evening twilight. So then here's our meditation. As day turns into night and we conclude our activities in that cycle, we chant our Gayatri mantras reflecting on the sun. We remember all the wonderful activities we were able to do during the day by the grace of Krishna, who is our ability, our intelligence, and our memory. The evening twilight is soft and soothing, gently and slowly going from light into darkness. Gradually, everything becomes hidden. The sun is there under the twilight, but we can't see it. As underneath the garments of an ordinary person, the body is hidden. Under the Lord's garments is his beautiful, shining, and attractive form glowing like the sun. The Lord here is called Urukrama, meaning someone who performs glorious or amazing actions. The fading of day into night is generally gorgeous, beyond the skill of an ordinary artist. The whole scenario of our rotating planet, that in relation to the sun, gives us day and night, is a wonderful action beyond human comprehension. This amazing cosmic dance of evening twilight is the swirling of the Lord's clothes, wonderfully hiding his glories.
Thank you for that. That is really beautiful. Thank you. Kamalasutta?
My favorite one is Our Secret Things I Am, the Silence. Keeping things truly confidential often challenges people. We may think we can break silence to share with just that becomes public knowledge. Instead, silent information is about our personal relationship with the Lord. Private and sacred, it is the safe in which our inner silence that we share only with Krishna himself. Gaining inner wisdom, that which is a secret to most of the world, is best done with this receptivity that gives us a silent break in our own mental chatter. In seeking understanding and advice, we have to apply silence in order to listen and learn. Srila Prabhupada explains, among the confidential activities of hearing, thinking, and meditating, silence is the most important, because by silence, one can make progress very quickly. Silence is the deepest act of listening by which we open ourselves internally to the most confidential knowledge. That act of silence not only invites Krishna, but represents him as a total giving of peaceful attention.
Thank you very much. Associating silence with confidentiality, I think, is a very powerful meditation as well. So thank you for that. Thank you for sharing those. We don't have much time, and I want to be able to reserve a few minutes at the end for questions from the audience. So I'm just going to go to my last question and then ask you a few questions that were written to us by the audience. And the question that I'd like to ask is, do you have another book in the pipeline, and can we expect another collaboration in the future?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, another book I have in the pipeline, which is going to be self-published, is with Rukmini Devi Dasi. That's Dr. Ruchira Dutta. And that's our working title is Career Dharma, The Natural Art of Work. It's also very much aimed at how to find Krishna consciousness in everyday life. It's focusing on career and showing the great intelligence and breadth and depth of the four main categories of work, and how we can find six kinds of richness in our life, and how everything that we do in our career can connect us with the Lord. So that's hopefully within about a year that'll be done. I'm also working on another book with another co-author, Anasuya, in Belgium, and that's for probably age 12 and up. And it's going to be going through the six seasonal forests of Vrindavan. And what activities does Krishna do according to the season? So we have, like, Shiva Ram Maharaj made a book of what Krishna does according to the place. And here we're going to do a book about what Krishna does according to the time. And we're planning on having it be a book of conversations between residents of Vrindavan about what Krishna is doing. And the other books that I have are some other novels, which I've just written a couple chapters of. So I don't know. I don't know how far that they'll get, but they're conceptually, I've done a lot of work with them, but those would be books that I've been working on myself. As to whether Kamala and Sita and I will do something together again, we don't have anything particularly planned, except hopefully to see each other and be friends once we can travel around the world, but who knows what Krishna may arrange in the future for both of us.
Well, I think in this time of social distancing, we've seen each other more often than we do when there's no social distancing, and that's all thanks to Zoom and everything. Yeah, for the time being, I'm hoping Krishna will inspire another collaboration, but as yet, I have a million of ideas, but some of them still have some. It still has to bake a little before I can manifest them.
Well, it seems, Kamala Sita, that you completed your doctoral thesis and then went straight into the book. So I think you've had quite a few years of writing.
Yeah, but I mean, writing a doctoral thesis and writing this book is two universes apart from each other. I'd rather, much rather write a book like this again than writing one thesis.
Absolutely. I am aware that Kamala Sita has some time constraints on her side, so I'm going to ask the questions, and if there's a need, I wonder whether Urmila Prabhu would be able to continue just for a few minutes after 3 o'clock. Right now we're at 10 to 3. So the first question that was asked by one of the audience is, there are already so many books on Krishna consciousness. What new value do you hope this new book, Krishna Meditations, will bring to the table?
Well, as I already mentioned, as far as I know, nobody has done anything like this at all. It's completely different. There's a lot of devotees that have written books on how to have meditative sadhana, how to have meditative japa, how to have meditative kirtan, how to worship the deity. But what about when you're walking down the street? What about when you're in the store? What about when you get angry? What about then? What about when you turn on the light? What about when you brush your teeth? How do you remember Krishna then? So, you know, Krishna says, yam yam vapi smram bhavam, whatever you think about when you die is where you go. And then he says, mama nu smram yuja cha. Think of me while you're doing your work in the world. So there is nothing like that.
Yeah, this is a very practical book. It's an extremely practical book, and it that's, we hope that it would help people to change their perspective on exactly what Ramana Prabhu was saying, to look at the world differently in order so that we are constantly thinking of Krishna.
Well, thank you for that. This is quite a sweet question. Urmila Prabhu, you mentioned that Kamala Sita wrote beautiful messages at the end of her letters. I don't know if you have them available, but the person's asking, could you give us one or two examples of what she wrote?
I don't know if I still have that file.
Oh, no.
Huh?
We would have to get the author's permission. That's Kamala Sita.
I could definitely find it, but it might take me a minute. Why don't you go to another question and I'll come back to that.
Sure. Hare Krishna, I think we've more or less addressed this one. It was about, would you be able to share an example of one of the meditations? So I think we've been through that one. Okay, let me ask you one of these. Perhaps Kamala Sita, you can let us know how writing Krishna meditations, you know, from the point at which you started to the point at when you finished, did you experience, what type of transformation did you experience, and specifically in terms of your practice of bhakti?
I mean, it's a very intensive way of reading, because I'm currently also doing some translation work, and whenever we work with the Shastra, and we have to work not only on a theoretical way, but in such a creative way, it does definitely change my perspective, because because I can't write something that I don't do myself, so I had to do what I hope others would do, and that is looking at the world differently and seeing Krishna everywhere. So it helped me definitely to be more aware of him, and also because this was such a long process, took many years to write it, and also those two times when we worked together, it definitely helped me to realize that the value of devotee association, and you can't do something like this alone. I mean, you can, but it's much better if you do it together. So that was really sad.
So I found the list of blessings, and I, looking at these, I'm thinking, Kamala Sita, you should really write a book. You should produce a book of these blessings, and how lovely it would be to have it illustrated. It was like, whoa, I'm just reading these and thinking how lovely to have this illustrated. So may your ears hear the notes of the flute song, and may your heart listen to its message. May the Lord's love be your shelter today and always. I pray that your heart may bloom in Krishna's moonlight. May Sri Sri Radha and Krishna shower mercy on you like the monsoon and keep you grounded like the mountain. May your love for them be deep as the ocean and your enthusiasm as constant as the rising sun. May you be blessed with rock-solid inner control and oceans of enthusiasm and compassion. May your travels be safely conducted within Sri Sri Radha and Krishna's mercy, and may their love and blessings be a light on your way. May the river of life only carry you to more mercy and love for Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. May the rays of the sun warm your heart, and may the Lord's light guide your way. May Sri Sri Radha and Krishna bless you with blossoms of their love today. May the Lord plant in your heart the seed of everlasting love and humility, and may it grow like a beanstalk that takes you back to Him. May Srimati Radharani's spirit of devotion and bhakti sweep over your soul like a cool breeze today. And you can see why I asked her to help write this book, you know, getting these benedictions in every email, you know. May Sri Krishna's love and mercy make your heart bloom like the Kairava Chandrika. May the mercy of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna transform the current of your life into a soothing stream to carry you to them. May the Lord's love be a buoy to keep you afloat and safe in the rushing current of everyday life. May Sri Sri Radha and Krishna's mercy and love soak you like a celestial rainstorm today and always. So, like, wow! You know, he had one of these in every email. And I'd be like...
Yeah, I have to interject because you were a source of inspiration for me. So, I mean, it didn't come from itself. It just came from my appreciation for you.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you for sharing those. I think, Kamala Sita, you definitely have lots of material that you can already use and expand on for another project. It really was beautiful what Umala Prabhu was reading. So thank you for sharing that with us. The last question that I have many other questions, but we could end with this one. It's really directed to Umala Prabhu. And it says, Dear Umala Prabhu, you have written many books for adults as well as for children. Would you be able to give any advice to someone aspiring to write for children?
Study about levels, what different children at different ages and different reading abilities can read in terms of content, sentence structure, illustrations, even font sizes. Really educate yourself into how children progress in learning at different ages, so that what you write is going to be holistically appropriate for that age of the child. We have a lot of devotees who write for children, and the vocabulary will be for age 7, and the sentence structure is for age 12. And the illustrations are for age 2. You know, that they don't do the research to do stuff that's holistic, and I find this almost everywhere. So practically everything that's been written for children in our movement is done by people who just, they don't take the time to delve into child development. And if you're going to write something has an educational branch to your writing, then study something about pedagogy. What is the best way to teach something? Because we see this also. People write books for children that have some learning exercises, and you can immediately tell, wow, they don't have a clue as to how children learn. So it doesn't take that much to do the research, but it needs to be done. And then maybe some consultant who's also trained in children's writing. When I wrote children's books, and I mean, I already had a PhD in education, I already had 27 years of experience teaching children academically, and I still went and got training from the Institute of Education in London, which was funded, thank you, by Sitaram Prabhu in London. And then when I was working in New Zealand, this one devotee, Dwarka Puri, who was a reading specialist, put me in touch with Beverly from Nelson Thorne's PM Publishing. She had produced 800 children's books. And I went and showed her my first drafts, and she just said, this is rubbish. This is disuseful. It's horrible. Don't use it. She said, you have to do this and this and this. You have to have the children have to be the hero. It's got to have a clear beginning, middle, and end. She gave me so much good advice and feedback and materials. So work with experts. No matter how smart you are, no matter how experienced you are, have experts who can give you feedback. After we spent months and months and months writing the book with Beverly Randall's insight and the training from the Institute and a lot of technical books that I was referencing, then we sent the books back electronically to the Institute of Education in a rough laid out form. And then we got feedback on that from these world experts in the Institute of Education, and they said, the last two-thirds of your books are great, the first third, they're not right. You know, there's this problem, that problem, and I realized that I had made a mistake in my foundational skeleton that I had to go back and fix. So writing books for children that really work, it requires some technical knowledge. It's not just something that you're going to throw together and it will be the kind of thing that you'll be happy with. That one of the 26 qualities of a devotee is daksha, to be expert. And we're supposed to gain expertise in our craft, whether it's Arjuna shooting his arrows, or whether it's cooking in the kitchen, or whether it's writing. to take the time and the effort to become expert.
Thank you so much for that. Thank you so much. We've reached the end of the session, and I know that Kamala Sita Prabhu does have time constraints. Yeah. So I just want to say how much I've enjoyed interviewing both of you. Actually, I wasn't sure how a co-authored type of interview would go, but you both really accentuate each other. I think that really gives us a glimpse into what, how wonderful your working relationship would have been. You used the word fun, and I can sort of understand how it would have been fun. So thank you so much for participating in this conference. The book, for those of you who are interested, will be published by the BBT, and it will likely be out by the end of the year. In all probability, it will be. And you can get your copy through the BBT Africa. So thank you very much. We are going to end the session, and the next session with the audience who would like to join us is going to start at 4 o'clock. So thank you very much, and Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you.